Welcome to the world of peace, love, and homicide, brought to you by the Broadcast and Communications Department of Dominican University. I'm your host, Bloody Cowboy, and we will be delving into the many distinguishing features of America in the 70s and 80s, particularly the prevalent serial killing. What was it about that time period that inspired over 1,000 mentally ill people to murder in such an abominable manner? What motivated serial killers like Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer to commit such atrocities? And why has this trend of serial murder declined in our day and age? I'll give my response to all those questions and more on this session of Peace, Love, and Homicide.
Welcome back to Peace, Love, and Homicide. I hope you had a fabulous week, and I hope you had a lot of fun listening to this podcast so far. Today, I want to talk about a case that is extra special to me. I learned a lot about it in my high school psychology class, only knowing the basics before. And we watched a documentary with found footage, and I was so intrigued that I never got over it. The person in question is Jim Jones. Now, he may not be technically a serial killer, but he is a mass murderer, and it seemed like his end goal was always aimed to kill. So personally, I feel like he still fits in the category of the 70s serial killers. This man manipulated people in the same way that a serial killer would, convincing him that they could trust him, live with him, and love him. And then he murdered them. If we're being honest, he did commit suicide, which is something that a lot of serial killers don't necessarily do. I mean, they will occasionally, but it'll be more like they will kill multiple people over a period of time and then commit suicide out of fear of being caught or something. But Jim Jones is a little different in my opinion, because he killed himself at the same time as he killed everyone else in like an act of passion, or as he would say, an act of God. And I believe he firmly believed in his crazy thoughts, but who knows? He could have just been making himself appear crazy to fit in and not be perceived as such a threat in the beginning, which is also true. He did do that. I don't know if it was like all forced or if he genuinely believed it. I don't know. But to the media, he was just a crazy man with even crazier and more gullible followers who trusted him so much that they believed in everything he said. His followers shunned and abandoned their family members who refused to join the followers group. They moved out of the country after gathering all their people, and some of them never returned. Family members were left heartbroken by the possibility of never seeing the person they love again. Jonestown's story begins with Jones, a white minister who preached unconventional socialist and progressive ideas to the People's Temple, a predominantly black congregation. At its peak in the 1970s, the People's Temple had tens of thousands of members, and it was courted by local politicians in San Francisco, including Harvey Milk. However, by 1977, Jones had become paranoid as a result of the media's scrutiny of the temple's suspicious activities. So he and his numerous followers relocated to an agricultural settlement, aka Jonestown, in Guyana, a remote country east of Venezuela. In November 1978, U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan paid a visit to Jonestown out of concern for the well-being of those living in the jungle encampment. Ryan was sadly shot to death alongside four other people at an airstrip by temple gunmen after checking out the settlement. Following the murders, Jones ordered his followers to consume cyanide-laced punch, beginning with the children. Over 900 people died in Jonestown, including Jim Jones, who was found dead from a gunshot wound to the head. There's speculation that he committed suicide or that he had his nurse Anne Moore fatally shoot him before killing herself in the same way. Prior to the September 11th attacks, the tragedy in Jonestown on November 11th, 1978, had the highest number of American civilian casualties in a single non-natural event. As I stated before, more than 900 people died at that secluded South American jungle settlement after drinking poison at the urging of their own leader, Reverend Jim Jones. Photographs taken after the carnage will forever document the sheer magnitude of the event. Hundreds of people, including children, lying face down in the grass. Decades later, survivor Jonestown recalled being a part of a church organization to which they devoted a significant portion of their lives. "The people were incredible," says Jean Clancy, a Temple newspaper reporter. "People who were willing to commit to something other than their own self-interest." Another former Temple member, Laura Johnston, adds, "We all of us, were doing the right thing in the wrong place with the wrong leader." People have wondered how Jim Jones, a preacher of racial and social equality, could have turned evil. As Tin Ritterman explained in his book, Jones's Dark Qualities, His need to control people, deception, and anger toward those who betray or abandon him can be traced back to his childhood in Indiana. Jim, a loner in his youth, would entertain his playmates in the loft of his family's barn and hold them captive. One time, he even locked up his friends in his barn. He experimented on animals and officiated at their funerals. "I thought Jimmy was a really weird kid," says Jones' childhood friend Chuck Wilmore. "He was obsessed with religion. He was obsessed with death. My friend said he saw Jimmy kill a cat with a knife." According to Jeff Ginn's book, Road to Jonestown, Jones had an early fascination with Adolf Hitler. When Hitler committed suicide in 1845, Jimmy was impressed with the thwarting enemies who sought to capture and humiliate him. Jim Jones established the People's Temple in Indianapolis. During a time of racial segregation, the church stood out for its multiracial membership, which was quite revolutionary. Jones came across an Esquire article in the early 1960s that listed the 9 safe places on the planet in the event of a nuclear disaster. One of those mentioned Eureka, California, which according to Esquire, escapes damage in the War Games attack because it's west of the Sierras and upwind from every target in the United States. Jones persuaded his congregation to leave for California, ever threatening them with a nuclear attack on July 15, 1967. Jones desired that others share his apocalyptic vision, Reiterman wrote in Raven. In his grand castle of paranoia, legitimate fears of thorough nuclear war erupted into a doomsday scenario. Then he would lead people to live interracially, like a modern-day Moses. Jones, his family, and approximately 70 of his followers relocated to Redwood Valley, California. By the mid-1970s, his church empire had expanded to San Francisco and Los Angeles. The People's Temple is frequently referred to as a cult, with members blindly devoted to a man and a cause at the expense of their own selves and livelihoods. A closer examination of Jim Jones' followers reveals a large and diverse mix of racial backgrounds and age groups drawn to the church's progressive and activist ideals. During their time in the temple, these dedicated and hardworking people did altruistic deeds for the community, and some of them had turned their lives around by quitting drugs and crime. "We felt more like a family than a church," says Cole. Tim and Grace Stone were married followers of Jim Jones during the temple's early years in California. Tim was a temple attorney and Grace was a member of Jones's inner circle. Grace gave birth to a son named John Victor Stone in 1972, and Jones claimed paternity. Tim signed away, confirming Jones as John's follower, which further complicated the matters. Grace left her son with Jones when she defected from the church in 1976, fearing for her and John's lives. She and Tim, who left the church a year later, worked together to get John back through the courts in the United States. By then, John had long been in Guyana, and Jones firmly refused to hand him over, despite court orders to do so. The dispute over John's paternity symbolizes the temple's bitter conflict with its opponents. If the Stoans were successful in reclaiming John, it would signal the end of Jones's vast power over his people and other relatives of the temple members seeking the return of their loved ones from Jonestown. In the end, John Victor Stoan was one of the 304 people aged 17 and under who were found dead in Jonestown. So back to the story.
Jones urged his followers in Jonestown to commit suicide after the attack on Congressman Ryan and his party at the Port Kaituma airstrip, or else the Guyanese military would come in and take their children away. The people drank the cyanide-laced punch from a vat, giving rise to the phrase "drinking the Kool-Aid," which refers to those who blindly follow something. However, the suicides were committed using a similar brand called Flavor-Aid rather than actual Kool-Aid. "It hurts every time I hear it," quotes Janelle Smart, whose 4 children, a mother, and uncle died in the tragedy. "I hated that people laugh when they said it, like it was something that was somehow funny." While the general consensus is that what happened was a mass suicide because people lined up to drink the poison drink, witnesses and former temple members have argued that it's actually mass murder. Long before the actual event, Jones had his followers drink what they initially thought was poison as a test of his loyalty to him, which was, in retrospect, a dress rehearsal for what was to come. When Jones carried out the actual suicide plan in Jonestown, armed guards with guns and crossbows were stationed to ensure that no one escaped alive. Some victims had marks on their bodies, indicating they had been injected with the poison. Adding to the mass murder case is the fact that many young children died in Jonestown who couldn't have known what they were doing. One supporter of the mass murder theory is Raven author, as I stated before, Tim Ritterman.
who was a reporter for the San Francisco Examiner during the shooting attack on Congressman. Jones put all the pieces into place for the final act of self-destruction. Then he gave the order to kill the children first, sealing everyone's fate afterward, he wrote. All in all, this case is an extra touchy subject, and we all know about Jonestown. So I want to take the time to remember those people who tragically passed away at the hands of that man and followed him so deeply that they went off the deep end. And sadly, he pushed them off the deep end, so that didn't help. But yeah, I hope you had a great time on today's episode of Peace, Love, and Homicide. Yeah.